Lord, send me an angel down. Can't spy you no angel, we'll spy you cheese and brown. That new way of life, swear to God it must be best. All these Georgia women won't let Mr. Maxwell rest. There was a crowd down on the corner. I wondered who could it be. One thing what the woman's trying to get to me. I went down to the shed with my suitcase in my hand. Crowd of women run crying, so Mr. Mac, won't you be my man?
It's Ron and Vinny Show, everybody. It's Tuesday night, January 26, 2011. Here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Yes, it is the second week of the NWO Sold Out Review. Well, that's hard to believe. Show's horrible.
God damn, what a terrible show.
It was really bad. And I don't know, I almost think the first half was worse than the second.
Oh, absolutely. First half was clearly worse than the second.
Second half was no good, don't get me wrong. But the first half was definitely worse, and the show as a whole is just wretched. Just wretched programming.
An insult to the paying audience, frankly.
Mm-hmm. We're going to get into that a little bit later on in the program here, but we've also got some SmackDown and Raw to talk about here. And after watching Sold Out, neither show looked quite so bad.
That is true. I've actually watched, let's see, it's 12:30 in the morning as we start this. I've watched all three of these shows in the past 6.5 hours. Hmm. So, I've seen a lot today. And I did, in fact, hate SmackDown and Raw when I watched them. And you know what? They weren't that bad. They were okay.
You hated SmackDown? I don't remember hating SmackDown. I didn't really hate Raw either, but Raw is a...
Raw was stupid.
As a go-home show, was really no good at all.
Yeah.
Quite wretched, actually.
SmackDown, there's one segment on here I hated.
Well, let's get into SmackDown. Let's not waste any time here. We've got things to do.
The segment I hated was, in fact, the opener. Wade and his new crew came out. They were...
Actually, when you said that, I opened up the wrong file, and the opener was DDP versus Scott Norton. I was like, I do not remember this from SmackDown this week.
That would have been, may have been worse than this. Actually, in 2011, I suspect it would have been much worse than this. Wade and his new crew came out. They announced they are called The Core, with a stupid, dumb spelling, which, when I saw the way it was spelled, I wanted to just run into a grocery store and punch everyone I saw. Just anger.
It's unhealthy anger, Vince.
Yeah, it's an unhealthy spelling. So, the deal is, they came out and they said, we are a new group, we are called The Core. Teddy Long came out and they chatted. Wade said, we're going to go win the Royal Rumble. And that was really about it. And it took like 12 minutes to get all this done.
Mm-hmm.
They just talked and talked and talked and talked. No one said anything useful. No one said anything interesting. No one said anything entertaining. It just went on forever and ever and ever.
Did everybody from The Core cut a promo?
Everyone, which...
Four men that just had nothing going for them. I realize that sounds kind of... I shouldn't say nothing going for them, because I think there's a little bit of hope for Justin Gabriel, and obviously Wade Barrett can talk, but overall, this group, the way they explained themselves, it was like, who could possibly, in a million years, care?
Heath Slater can do matches and certainly not embarrass himself. He shouldn't, really just does not need to ever have a microphone ever again.
No.
Zeke is big and scary.
The one-man rock band in the middle of The Core was so out of place, and everybody just looked at him like, the fuck?
Yeah, this did not work. And Wade is Wade. We all know Wade. He's good at it. Good at it. But this...
Much better than you are at the mic.
He is a better talker than I am. That's true. So then Alberto came out. This segment would not die. He came out in his car. He vowed to win the Royal Rumble. And then thank God we went to commercial. And then we came back. That's right. It got worse. Truth wrestled Alberto.
You know, I've mentioned many times. This is a great example right here. I've mentioned many times that it's good to keep things simple. It's good to... You don't want to overbook. You don't want to overwrite. You don't want too many segments. You don't want things to be confusing.
You don't want too much going on in one segment.
You just want to keep things simple. Now, with that said, if I hear fucking Alberto Del Rio come out one more time and do nothing but talk about how he's going to win the Royal Rumble, it's his destiny, and cut the same fucking promo for the 94th straight show, maybe I'll walk into a supermarket and start punching people. I was a huge fan, and I still am, of Alberto Del Rio, but they are killing him. Killing him.
Yeah. It's, and well, there's one more show You probably will not be hearing it after Sunday.
Let me go check the SmackDown spoilers and see if everyone should stay out of supermarkets on Saturday morning.
So, Truth wrestled Alberto for about the 400th time. The highlight of the match itself was when Matt Stryker dropped a Foo Schnickens reference in 2011. That was tremendous. So, the whole point of this match was the match itself would be a backdrop to the angle going on backstage where Teddy Long had apparently been killed. They had people standing over his body. Vicky and Dolph were there. Some other guys were there. Apparently, Michael Tarver was in the scene, mm-hmm. which...
He was.
I obviously had edited the newsletter before I read this. If you had not pointed out that Michael Tarver was here, never would have occurred to me that was a former pro wrestler. He's just there in a suit randomly. So they all hovered over Teddy Long's prone body. They all acted badly. Then they go back to the ring, and Michael Cole says, direct quote here, "We're not sure what that was about." Well, you dumb fuck. Your boss was unconscious on the floor backstage. This is a man who had a heart attack on this show not that long ago, and Josh actually brought that up. The announcing on the show killed me. So,
by the way, on SmackDown Friday, there is an Alberto Del Rio segment backstage talking to Michael Tarver. I can only imagine that conversation. And there's a tag match with Alberto Del Rio, but it does not mention if before the match he announces that he is going to win the Royal Rumble and it is his destiny. So, there's hope.
You may escape.
There's hope that I may escape it this week. God damn, I'm sick of that.
So Alberto finally went with the armbar. Then show the ambulance taking
Teddy. If he at least cut a different promo every time, or it was framed in a different context, you know, even if he just explains it to Michael Tarver, maybe I'll be okay with that, because at least it's something different. I don't need to see the same fucking interview every single week. Like, almost word for word. Proceed.
The ambulance took Teddy Long away. As Michael Cole was imploring them to go, 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 get out of here. Idiot. We had back in Teddy's office one of those promos where everyone stands facing the camera and then turns awkwardly to try to look at each other when they talk. The Corps was there. They pleaded their innocence. They offered their services to Vicky since he was in charge. She said one of them would wrestle Edge tonight and she wants each and every one of you to live up to your reputation. They're fine with that. Beth Phoenix wrestled Layla. The announcers here were far and away the highlight. I was certain a brawl was going to break out, and Matt Stryker and Michael Cole were going to have the funniest fight ever. Actually, when you think about it, Stryker would kill him. But
sure.
But Michael Stryker's references here in this match between Beth Phoenix and Layla L included a Storm Cradle Driver, a Short Arm Scissors, Antonio Inoki, and Bob Backlund. Michael Cole, meanwhile, was saying things like, and this is a quote, "What a lovely shade of purple." These two men are working together.
Yeah.
And at one point, Stryker even said, okay, I'll just stop talking about grappling and tell some stories instead. How can this be? How can these men still be colleagues?
They're colleagues because they're forced to be.
I realize that, but how can no one realize it's a bad idea?
Well, that's probably why they're colleagues.
So, Beth won with the bitch clamp. That was that. Rey Mysterio wrestled Cody Rhodes. Here's what happened, everybody. Rey shined at the beginning. Cody got some heat. Rey made his comeback and pinned him.
Yeah.
There were no other transitions. There were no other hope spots. There were no other false finishes or near falls. That's it.
Glorified squash.
It really was.
Mm-hmm.
We had Miz and Riley showed up backstage, and when Miz showed up on screen, Michael Cole at the announce desk said, "Ha! He's here!"
Yes.
Michael Cole so clearly considers SmackDown to be a giant joke, and the entire show is beneath him now. It's amazing.
Well, no, he's just a huge fan of The Miz. He's a mark for The Miz. That's been established on every show.
But he's a mark to such a degree that it's impossible to take him seriously.
Well, of course.
It is comedy. Speaking of comedy, I guess... This was a lousy show. I take it back. Kofi Kingston wrestled Jack Swagger in the Amateur Wrestling Challenge.
Why?
There was no challenge issued. There was no...
I don't know.
...point to this other than they've already wrestled again and they needed something
Why
new.
Why in the fuck would Kofi Kingston accept an Amateur Wrestling Challenge with Jack Swagger?
He's a fool.
It's like if I'm trying to think of a basketball player nowadays. Name someone who's not like, you know, Magic Johnson. Someone not from the 80s.
LeBron James.
LeBron James. That's like if a LeBron James challenged me to a basketball, like a shootout or whatever you call it. And I'm like, sure, I got a chance.
A slam dunk competition?
Yeah. I'd be a complete idiot to do this. Yes. And that's Kofi. Sure, Mr. Swagger, I'd be happy to wrestle you in an amateur challenge. He was made to look like such a fucking geek in
this
match.
Yes, Swagger completely toyed with him. He would constantly take him down for 2 points and then let him up, which would be an escape for Kofi at 1 point. They did this for the entire 3-minute round, I guess. Swagger was also schooling the ref, as he had to explain at 1 point that he had a near fall and thus he should have 2 more points. So the ref said, oh, okay, and called for that. Then at the very end, he let Kofi up one more time, and Kofi, in like 5 seconds, got a escape, a takedown, and a near fall to make it 10-9 at the finish. So they both got up, they both stared at the screen, they said Swagger won, but he was upset that it was that close, so he pie-faced Kofi, so Kofi hit him with his kick and also the high cross, and they both looked like goofs. A fail of a segment here.
A mega fail. And this is supposed to make me want to see this match again. How?
It did not. Speaking of segments that failed, Drew wrestled Trent Beretta. The wrestling was fine. They had a fun match.
This was a mind-boggling segment.
This is what happened afterwards. Drew won with the belly-to-belly off the middle rope. Pinned the man clean. He was the better man. Then, they've wrestled now 3 times. And after all this battle, Drew is starting to respect the young man. He's got gumption. He's got talent. He's got something. He's got a little spark. So after all this, Drew McIntyre extends his hand for a handshake, a sign of sportsmanship and admiration. Trent Beretta hauls off and hits him with a forearm. So Drew McIntyre, quite rightly, takes it upon himself to teach this young man some respect and beats the tar out of him. Just destroys him. So then Kelly Kelly comes out. She yells at Drew. Drew, again, quite rightly, sticks up for himself, saying, and I quote, "He hit me first." Fact. That is a fact. So then Kelly knelt to tend to poor Trent Beretta. You know, I've often heard people say that for every hot girl out there, there's a guy somewhere who is sick of her shit. Shouldn't Drew McIntyre be sick of Kelly's shit by now?
Of course not.
Okay. I guess I just don't get it.
He's got to use her first.
Well, there is that.
He's an asshole.
Well, that actually does make some sense. He has not yet conquered her.
Mm-hmm.
Miz came out.
These are just things I've heard, by the way. Wanted to mention that.
Let's move on. Miz came out. He was talking about being awesome and doing awesome and bullshit. Edge interrupted. Said he was tired of Raw rejects coming on his show and acting like they run things. He wanted to fight Miz, but Miz bailed.
Which, by the way, he did the exact same thing on Raw on Monday.
What's that?
He came out and tried to run the show.
Oh, he did. That's true, yes.
He opened the show and tried to book it.
Yes, that is correct. So, who cares?
Stupid show.
So, Miz walked away. Riley got speared. Miz teased fighting again and then backed away a second time.
You were
on
a roll tonight.
Shut up.
Just mentioning it.
The core.
It's good to be on a roll about something.
The core came out. Here's where they put up the graphic. It's CORRE. Why?
Vinny, relax.
God damn it. So we had the main event of the show, Justin Gabriel versus Edge. Dolph Ziggler was in commentary. Quite honestly, he did a hell of a job. He was talkative. He had a lot to say. He sounded interested about everything. He sounded very well-spoken and intelligent. Giant thumbs up for Dolph Ziggler here. They had a match. It was fine. Gabriel's really talented, still very green. Edge is clearly in some pretty rough shape these days. He prepped for the spear when all of the other three members of CORE interfered. Zeke laid him out behind the ref's back, and then Justin Gabriel pinned Edge. Weird.
I'm looking at...
Did he get his win back on SmackDown?
Disambiguation of the CORE, for those wondering. It's a commune in France.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
If only there was a Frenchman on the crew.
There are also a number of folks with that surname. Joseph Corr, a British businessman best known for co-founding the British lingerie company Agent Provocateur.
Lingerie, you say?
Yeah. There's Sadie Corr, a 4'2" actress, tap dancer, comic performer, and leading pantomime cat.
This I've got to see.
Leading pantomime cat? What the hell does that mean?
S-A-D-I-E?
Yeah.
Corr.
Quarantine Corr.
That looks like a small woman.
A Breton cyclist.
She apparently played an Ewok.
Really?
Well,
how about that? Let's see any other good ones here. I do like this. I do. Yvonne Le Corr. Perhaps I'll bring in the Marquis. The Marquis El Corr.
Marquis Von Corr.
Count Marquis Von Corr. That's
I like
right.
Chris Jericho's Twitter line where he said he heard the Corrs were on SmackDown, his favorite Celtic folk rock band.
There you go, everybody. The Corr. Did we finish that review?
Pretty much. Mm. They laid him out. Dolph Ziggler came out and stood over him, and that was it.
Yeah, that was
a dumb show.
A bad show. Dolph was better only because he was not reading scripted lines.
Great. I don't care why he was better.
All right.
He was better.
He was better. He was better. All right, let's do Raw. I'll try and find a song to play here. And you know the whole deal.
You want me to get going or?
Well, that's when I said let's get going on Raw.
I see. Edge came out, as you noted. He did, in fact, invade Raw and try to run the entire show.
This segment blew...
This opening segment was a million times worse than the opening segment on Raw or on SmackDown. He did some comedy, which you could tell, as you noted in the newsletter, comedy that was clearly written for John Cena and then just given Edge.
Mm-hmm.
So he did it. He called out Miz. Email interrupted, said, God, no, I'm going to have a champion versus champion match to open Raw. He postponed it. He then announced a mini Royal Rumble with the person who threw out Edge getting number 40. Why did the GM want Edge thrown out of this mini Royal Rumble? We don't know. So the Rumble was Edge versus Jack Swagger versus Tyson Kidd versus Drew McIntyre. Edge won in like 90 seconds. Geeks.
All the dorks. All the dorks.
One of whom is feuding with the U.S. champion and the other is, well, they're doing something with them on SmackDown. So at first I was thinking, so is Edge number 40 now? And then I remembered, oh wait, he's already world champion. He's not in the Rumble. I forgot. I was also intrigued here. The cut to a shot of Jerry Lawler, and behind him was a fan who was wearing a Mark Henry is awesome t-shirt.
Sure.
And there appeared to be a photo of this man standing next to Mark Henry.
Well, so, this man is awesome when you look at how long he's been employed for no discernible reason.
Well, he's awesome for several reasons. So Edge said he was still out there. He was going to go wrestle later, but now it was time to destroy the computer. Before he could get there, Nexus interrupted. They came out. I don't know what happened to Edge.
He vanished into thin air. It's a mystery.
The crowd. The world champion was an afterthought here.
Mm-hmm.
So, Nexus came out, Punk and his crew. Let's see. He introduced Mason Ryan by name. He talked about faith. Said he would win the Royal Rumble. It was going on and on and on. And then the core interrupted.
When Vinny is bored by a CM Punk promo, there's trouble.
This was all one goddamn segment, everybody.
Yeah.
I had not stopped yet. So they bickered back and forth for a while. They're having a stare down. GM interrupted again.
I love that they teased Zeke versus Mason Ryan.
Zeke versus Mason Ryan. They had a stare down.
I cannot even fathom that
contest. As long as they don't do anything else but a stare down, I'm fine with that. They are two big, scary dudes. Let them stare down all they want. So, yes, the GM interrupted again. He booked, for the main event of this show, CM Punk versus Wade Barrett with the winner, loser and their entire group out of the Rumble match. And then, why not, the guest referee would be John Cena. The show was 50 minutes old. I was already exhausted. And we had the rest of the show to go. We then had Mark Henry and John Morrison versus Sheamus and Alberto. Thank God, they just had a very basic tag match. Went a long time, but not too long. Got the heat on Morrison. He hot tagged Mark Henry. He ran wild. Everyone hit a big move. Then Alberto tapped out John Morrison with the armbar. This was the best segment of the entire night, I think.
It was not bad.
It was on any of the shows, actually. We had Melina versus Natalya. Natalya's comeback now includes botched hip tosses. Yeah. So they had a match.
Were we just talking about this a couple of weeks ago about doing a big comeback and having a hip toss in it?
And
we were talking about Buddy and I doing it at the training school.
As we noted, we were talking about matches in Buddy's garage, and B, the hip tosses were executed correctly.
Well, that's true.
That helped. So they had a match. It really was not very good until the finish. They stole the Bret Hart Mr. Perfect finish from whatever SummerSlam that was, 91 or something. And Natalya put on the sharpshooter. And then this became live torture. I realize Melina's a ridiculously flexible human being, but Natalya put on the sharpshooter and cranked it back so deep she had to do a neck bridge to keep her shoulders off the mat, and Cole pointed this out. She basically turned Melina inside out. I was shrieking watching this. It was scarred my memory. I will never forget.
You would turn Melina inside out has scarred my memory.
Well, yes, but that was bad. But she won, so there's that. Then Lady Cool came out. They said they would get a rematch at the Rumble. They made a couple of fat jokes, which is absurd. And Natalya actually did look upset by them, too. So there you go. Punk and Nexus had another...
It's the second year in a row that they've done the Lay Cool against the person they call fat at the Rumble.
And again, for the second year in a row, the person is not that fat. Really, Natalya... Mickey had at least put on some weight from what she had before. Natalya is not fat by anyone's definition.
Stupid. By WWE's definition.
Anyway.
Her employer...
Okay, theirs. So Punk and Nexus had another meeting about sacrifice. This, everyone basically used the exact same, they used different words to say the exact same things. Husky Harris expressed doubt. Mason Ryan told him to have faith. Punk told him not to worry. Then McGillicuddy expressed doubt. Punk told him to have faith. Finally, they all took a knee and they bumped knuckles. Riveting.
Yeah.
Cena was cutting a promo. Miz showed up. They did more comedy. They talked a bunch of shit. I have no point what any of them were trying to say. Boring. Miz versus Edge, champion versus champion match in the opening of the second hour on Raw.
Champion versus champion.
Theoretically, the two best wrestlers, the two biggest stars in the entire company here. Opening the top of the hour match. As Miz came out, Cole leapt to his feet to talk about how great he was, and they cut to the announce desk to show this, and Lawler just looks at him and says, why are you standing up? I love Jerry Lawler on this show. They had a very long match. Poor Edge, frankly, looked out of shape. He was breathing very hard and very loud at some points. And then they worked really hard for all of this, and at the end, Ziggler just attacked him for the DQ. Well, can't have Miz get pinned, I guess. God forbid people think he's a loser.
Yeah.
So the three heels were out there. Orton came out and ran wild and everyone. Miz hit him with a knee in the briefcase, but somehow when it ended, Orton was still in the ring standing triumphant with his music playing.
Because he hit him in the knee with a briefcase and that only stopped Randy Orton for a moment.
Don't know.
Yeah.
And that, by the way, these are the two title programs, which again, the two biggest stars in the company, theoretically, and their challengers for the pay-per-view on Sunday, were not seen again throughout the show.
I've always wondered, if one guy is pushed as the unbeatable guy, why isn't he the champion?
I don't know. Isn't that what a champion is supposed to be, is the best guy?
If another guy is always a loser, why is he the champion?
That is an even better question. I don't understand these. I don't understand these at all. We had a Wade Barrett promo. He said that he made a mistake with the original Nexus. He became obsessed with the WWE Championship, and he lost the group. But he learned from his mistakes, and Cole will be stronger because of it. Hey, I got his point here. Thumbs up. This promo had a purpose. Daniel Bryan and Brie and Nikki Bella versus Ted DiBiase and Alicia and Maryse.
What a battle.
Another direct quote from Michael Cole. The problem with DiBiase is that he hasn't been able to win. Can't argue.
That is some riveting analysis right there.
Cannot argue with that. So, like, they went like a minute, maybe two, and then one Bella tried to fuck Daniel Bryan on the apron. The other Bella was distracted and got pinned. Maryse won. They cut backstage. The Bellas were bitching at each other. They passed Michael Tarver, who again was just randomly standing in the hallway. They went backstage, or they went into a locker room. They caught Daniel making out with Gail Kim. And yes, as someone... I forget if they called in or sent an email to the show. They said it was going to be the vegan virgin joke. I said that joke was too smart for WWE writers. I was wrong.
You were wrong.
It was all, yeah. They thought it would be funny to have the Bellas be confused by vegans and virgins.
Although when you really think about the line, it was like the Bellas were like, we thought you were, and he said, yes, I'm a vegan. In what real life conversation would that be?
I don't know.
What was Brian thinking that they were thinking? And what did that have to do with making out with Gail Kim?
I guess Brian thought that they thought he was a vegan. And he wanted to confirm it.
Why did he think they thought he was a vegan? And what did that have to do with Gail Kim?
Well, see, they thought he was a virgin. That part I get. I don't understand why his veganism explains why he's dating Gail Kim.
Okay.
It doesn't make sense. So the girls then got in a cat fight. They buried each other for never being on TV, which makes them all look like geeks. A brawl broke out. One of them slapped Daniel Bryan, the United States champion, who was dropped with the slap. Fell to his back. Yeah. We then had the tag team champions. I hated these shows. I really did. Santino and Vladimir Kozlov wrestled Michael McGillicuddy and Husky Harris. Harris is very large these days. I don't know if Kozlov is hurt, but he was on the apron waiting for a hot tag. Husky shoved him off the apron, and he disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Gone for good. So Santino did his comeback. He teased a Cobra. He got cut off, and he was pinned. That's your tag team champions, everybody.
Well, hopefully this will set up the rematch for the championships.
You're giving them too much credit these days.
I'll bet this will.
I bet it will lead to a Santino-Kozlov breakup.
Because they have actually many times now done this and actually had the title match. In fact, the Melina match this evening was her championship match after winning that thing some time back. A long time ago, I believe they called
well,
it.
Well, you've got me there.
Yeah.
She won a thing some time back. I can't argue with that.
Number one contender's thing for the championship.
Yeah, so Husky pinned Santino with a twisting downward spiral. An odd match. Then we had our main event. CM Punk versus Wade Barrett. John Cena was ref.
Welcome to NWO Sold Out.
No, this is better than that. This is certainly better than the main event of that show. At least the finish.
Wait, well, let's think about this.
Actually, maybe it wasn't. Hang on.
Hold on a second.
I could be wrong.
This was Punk versus Barrett with the loser's team being banished from the Rumble.
Right.
So, two big stars with a big stipulation. This match was so fucking big that it was even bigger than champion versus champion,
yeah,
which went on earlier in the show. So then, in this gigantic match, not only was there no match and no real finish, but no stipulation was upheld. This was NWO Sold Out.
The only thing I would argue with is that here, they did at least ring the bell and John Cena called a finish. They did some kind of double down, and John Cena called for the bell and announced both men were disqualified due to use of profanity. That is...
On a PG show.
That is a shitty finish, but at least there was a finish, as we will get to Sold Out here. But in fact, the stipulation was just ignored. It was completely thrown out. The GM ordered Cena to get back to the ring and apologize. He did. First, the GM announced the stipulation was thrown out. John Cena was pissed. He was appalled. How dare the GM put these men back in the Rumble when I have clearly gone out of my way to screw both of them? Which begs the question of why Cena would be the GM in the first place, or the ref in the first place. I guess the GM is just an idiot. So he went back to apologize, then he punched them, a fight broke out, Core and Nexus returned, and then they did the usual battle royal before the Royal Rumble. It went off the air without a winner.
That is a good question. What was the GM thinking?
I don't know. It didn't make sense at any point in the show.
What a stupid computer.
The stupid computer had no good reason for Cena to be the ref, other than he wasn't doing anything else on the show and they wanted to get him on TV.
Well, it's time for Sold Out, everybody.
The show sucked.
Let me play a quick song and wipe those shows from our minds. The other night at dinner, we had a huge argument. I just was watching it going, wow. And then I was very surprised to see Dave Meltzer doing a dive off the balcony in a hospital.
What?
That was something else. And people chanted his name. Apparently this happens regularly.
Yeah. It's like an act of God. You know, it was what it was.
Bleeding all over the place. Dave doesn't joke around.
No, you know why?
Why?
Because we're so great storytellers, and I know how to lose and stay over. And you know what? There's no reason.
And
which actually is pretty funny.
Yep.
This all happened.
This all happened.
I mean, I've done a couple times, like, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, when you have friends and you see it before your eyes, you kind of can figure it out.
Yeah.
I just don't know what, I think it's just the nature of the beast.
Rodan, indeed.
The clowns win.
No, it's not, sometimes.
This is my life, everybody. What the hell can you do?
No, wait a minute.
We can never have a bad show. Huh.
What the hell was that?
That was a whole bunch of statements mashed together into a fascinating conversation, which I did not understand.
Wait, it peaked in the first line.
What was the first line again? The other night at dinner, we had a huge argument. I just was watching it going, wow. And then I was very surprised to see Dave Meltzer doing a dive off the balcony in a hospital.
And then Dave chuckled. It should stop right there. That
would
be great.
Something else. And people chanted his name.
There, stop the drop, yes.
All right. I got to make mention, by the way, of the annual Royal Rumble pools. And I'm not reading them on this show. I'll read them on Thursday's show. Number one, because it's very late right now. And number two, because you know how many pools I have been emailed that have claimed to be the official pool? I need to know what's going on here. I have to know what's going on. Now, I'm going to allow three pools this year. The website gets bigger every year. I need to cut it down. So I need three official pools, and who do I know? Who have I met that I can put in charge of getting these to me? I will say Klitz, because he's going to play the next song. Klitz, if you're listening right now, I need you to gather together the legit official Royal Rumble pools and send them to me to read on the air. Everyone can bicker among themselves about which ones are official and that sort of thing, but I just need one official list of three Royal Rumble pools. Send it to me, and we will read it here on the show on Thursday. That should make everything much easier, because I'm just too confused right now. Just too many different people sending me too many different pools. I need something that I need something official from the Royal Rumble pool area of the board. I don't even know if this thing exists, but if it does, that's where it should come from. All right, NWO sold out. This is part two. For all you freeloaders, part one was reviewed last week, and part one was much worse than this. Don't get me wrong, this half was also horrible, but last week's half, wow. This opened with DDP and Scott Norton in a wrestling match, and kind of one of those deals where it looked like it was on its way to being a decent match. You know? Scott Norton's a big, tough guy. Dallas Page, pretty good worker. And they did a whole bunch of stuff. And suddenly, Sting appeared. Fake Sting, presumably. And
that's a good question. Probably, because it must have been. Because the real Sting never showed up on the show. But there was a man shown from quite a distance away wearing a trench coat and white face paint.
And Bischoff was excited, so I presume this was fake Sting.
Yeah.
So then, as Page is about to hit his finish, all of a sudden, Bagwell and Big Bubba Rogers and some of the other B-team geeks came down to the ring, and they attempted to recruit him into the NWO. So, in the middle of the match, mind you.
Yeah.
So he put the T-shirt on and shook Norton's hand and then gave him the diamond cutter and then ran through the crowd and I guess that was the end. Norton won via count out.
That is what, yes, Nick Patrick said that. Nick Patrick turned to the camera and announced it, and they played the same damn NWO song.
They played that song so many times
on
the show.
And if you have not seen the show or forget, there were more than one NWO song. We all remember the porno music that they used for Hall and Nash. The B-teamers had their own tune. It was jauntier.
What's jauntier?
It was happier. It sucked.
And more jovial.
It was I don't know.
It was like the roll out the barrel of the NWO.
Sure. So that's the song they played 800 times in the show. And yes, the angle they were doing here, because DDP had been a heel forever, and this, in fact, this was the angle that was turning him babyface, and he was still coming out, he's still smoking a cigar for his entrance, had sunglasses on, totally, he was Jersey Shore sleazy before there was a Jersey Shore, if you know what I mean. And
no, that was way too complex, Ace.
Well, there was still a place called New Jersey, and it had a shore.
I see.
There was just no MTV program.
Thank you, baby.
So, yeah.
We had the...
the interview guy for more Miss NWO bullshit.
Yeah. Katz. And they...
Katz?
Yeah, Jeff Katz.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I thought your cats had just run in the room.
No.
Yeah, the only highlight here was that he started doing the interviewing while they were still showing replays in the previous match. So we're watching Scott Norton and Dallas Page in slow-mo as he began asking questions like, what would you do to satisfy Masahiro Chono?
Anything it takes.
That was the answer. That was the popular answer these women had.
And that will be a hell of a drop. Steiner Brothers versus the Outsiders. This, at first, was not bad. It's a tag team match. Hall and Nash were much younger. Steiners were obviously much younger. In fact,
well, think about
coincidentally,
it.
Everyone on the show was much younger in 1997.
In the building was much younger 14 years ago.
What an amazing stat that is right there.
Yes.
So anyway, they went too long. They went fucking forever.
They went forever. And also, when they got the heat on Rick took like 7,000 moves in a row.
Mm-hmm.
He just sold, and he didn't sell well either. He just... took a bunch of punches and a million elbows, a side slam or two. The early part of this match, actually, when these... Well, I was going to say four giant men. Nash was on the apron. But these three giant men were throwing each other around. It was really good. Then it slowed down.
Yeah, and finally. Go
about
ahead.
An hour later, Scott Steiner got the hot tag. He ran wild again. He was terrifying again. He suplexed Kevin Nash onto his head. Quite likely the only time that ever happened. And that was the finish. Oh, the...
I totally forgot, too, when we watched this an hour ago.
Yeah. The Steiners went for the Doomsday Device. Nash broke it up by shoving Rick in the back, and I didn't even realize this happened at the time until they showed a replay later.
Didn't the Steiners just do the combo top rope bulldog?
What's that?
The Steiners.
They did.
I presume that's what they were setting up for here.
The point is, Rick Steiner had Scott Hall on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And Nash hit Rick in the back. And as I said, I didn't even notice this at the time. But like dominoes, they all fell into Nick Patrick, who stumbled over and waved his arms in the air.
When you say that Nash hit them from behind...
He hit them with his ass.
I guess.
He did his knee... You know, it's the same knee lift he always did. He's usually a knee lift to the belly, so it looks better.
Dominoes is a perfect analogy, because you give one domino a little tiny push and they all fall down.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened
here.
He
gave a little tiny push here. He shoved his hip into Rick Steiner's back.
I guess.
And that caused... Would you like to say he stood behind Rick and raised his knee?
He ran at Rick, and then at the last minute tried to dodge around him and not touch him.
I suppose.
But he got him.
This caused Rick to put Scott Hall down. This caused Scott Hall to bump into Nick Patrick. This caused Nick Patrick to wave his arms to and fro and fall through the ropes. And that apparently killed him for minutes.
Long time.
He was down for a long, long time. So Scott Hall hit Scott Steiner with the razor's edge. He made a cover, but there was no Nick Patrick. So he got to his feet, raising his hands like, hey, what's going on? And he was doing this in such a manner as to make it patently obvious. He's basically shouting to the crowd, I am sitting myself for Rick Steiner to hit me with a bulldog. So Rick Steiner did. And then one of the WCW refs ran out from the crowd and ran to the ring and counted the pin. Place went crazy. Steiner took the belts and left. DiBiase and Bischoff were screaming that he was not an NWO-sanctioned ref. This should not count. It would all be thrown out later. And I don't remember what happened 14 years ago, but... It just seems classic WCW to have a title match on pay-per-view end, and you as a viewer at home are left wondering, I wonder if that verdict will stand.
Yeah.
That's classic. It was, to this point, probably the best match in the show, if just because the crowd did go crazy for the finish. Like I said, the beginning and end were pretty good. It was just that middle portion that needed some work.
I'm trying to remember all the details, but Randy Anderson actually had cancer. He's since passed away.
That sucks.
And I think that they... I'm trying to remember if they actually fired him when he had cancer. I can't remember all the details, but I remember that someone will email me tomorrow and remind me, but I remember it being quite the deal back then. But it was Randy Anderson here that ran back, and Bischoff was obviously very upset with him for doing what he did.
So we had Eddie Guerrero versus Six in the ladder match. Six's U.S. title was at stake. I said last week this was on the Eddie Guerrero DVD. Someone corrected me. It's on the Rise and Fall of WCW. So that's where I've seen it before. They had the NWO announcer identify Eddie as a Mexican jumping bean.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie stopped and looked around like he was not cool with that. Bischoff called Six the one-man rock concert, which was not quite Heath Slater's catchphrase, but close enough to annoy me. They had a pretty good match that was a little hard to watch for a couple of reasons. First of all, you watch this Eddie Guerrero, and then you remember the Eddie Guerrero you saw in the end there in WWE, and quite frankly, it is no mystery why the man died. He put himself through some abuse.
Yeah.
This Eddie here was a lean, athletic man with a very human physique, normal-shaped head, did have a very sweet mullet mustache. And he could move like nothing. Or move like the wind. He was looked great in the ring. And then Bischoff started talking about Six and his lengthy history of concussions. That was awkward. And then Six sort
of... You know what was interesting about this was, you know, with all the concussion stuff nowadays, it seems like some people think that this is all, like, new information. When, you know, obviously there is some new information, but, I mean, Bischoff here is talking in 1997 about how concussions are bad because once you suffer one, you're more susceptible to others. 1997, everybody! And he knew this fact in the 80s when he suffered them doing karate.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Six started throwing martial arts kicks. Bischoff went on another goddamn rant about karate and how there were...
As a man who does karate, this still infuriated me.
He was started talking about Van Damme and Seagal and phony karate guys in Hollywood who have 50 camera takes and whatever.
I told the story about how I saw Seagal in the airport, didn't I?
Maybe?
Yeah.
How was Seagal in the airport?
I just saw him from a distance.
Was he attacked by a group of men who fought him one at a time?
No, believe it or not, he was only recognized by two people aside from myself.
Actually, I don't believe that.
Yeah, he showed up. He had a lackey with him.
Sure.
I know you're shocked. A bespectacled, out-of-shape fella. Was his lackey.
Oh, when you said lackey, I assumed it would actually be like a bodyguard.
No.
He had a lackey. Okay.
He had a legit lackey.
Okay.
So they were at the airport, him and his lackey, and his lackey was in charge of scheduling, I guess, or something of that nature. Anyway, the people that worked at the Starbucks kiosk apparently recognized him, and no one else did. And I was actually the first person to recognize him, because I was standing there in the airport, and I looked over, and I was like, is that Steven fucking Seagal? And I can't even remember the last. The last memory I have of Steven Seagal was when I was a young teenager, and I saw whatever movie it was where the chick with the giant boobs came out of the cake or whatever.
Oh, yes.
It's the only memory, only memory I have of any Steven Seagal movie, but I still recognize this fucker from a distance. And obviously, he's much older now than he was in that film.
Much like the people from Sold Out.
Exactly. And so I went on my phone, and I Googled him, and I saw some of the pictures of him nowadays, and I was like, sure as shit, that's fucking Steven fucking Seagal right there. So then the people from the kiosk walked over to him, and they struck up a conversation, and it was clear that this was Mr. Seagal, and I was not going to go over and say, hey, Steve! You know, can I have an autograph or any such bullshit? I just kind of, I observed from afar and I surreptitiously took a stalker style photo with the iPhone. And anyway, the whole point of this story is that I can confirm from listening to him that Steven Seagal realizes how fat he is and has no problem making fun of himself.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's like the first likable thing about Steven Seagal I've ever heard.
Yeah, he was...
Most stories about him are not good.
I wish I remember the line he said about his ponderous midsection, but I forget it.
So anyway, Six versus Eddie Guerrero. They had a pretty good match. A lot of the ladder stuff they did has, you know, quite frankly, seemed passe in 2011. It was nothing new. I'm sure at the time it was all pretty damn revolutionary. And they also did a good job of making it seem like a fight to grab a belt and not just a string of men doing stupid stuff. So the crowd, there was not a lot of heat early. You could hear one guy call Eddie a faggot. And then like 2 seconds went by, and then he called Six a faggot. Man, it was very hard to please. So they ended up... the finish for this sucked. They ended up fighting on top of the ladder. They both grabbed the belt. It came down. They both had a hold of it. So Eddie clunks Six with it.
The finishes on this fucking show.
Six fell to the mat, but I'm pretty damn sure Eddie was supposed to hold on to the belt. So he'd be left standing atop the ladder with a belt in his hands. But Six takes this bump to the mat from the ladder, and then the belt falls on top of him too. And he has to make like a conscious effort to not grab it. And Eddie has to scurry down the ladder and grab the belt, and then they announce him as the winner, and everyone cheered. So
there were some horrible finishes on this show.
Yeah.
One after another.
This is the only thing, really the only match in the show that I would qualify as being good. And it did save this. This is most definitely not the worst pay-per-view I've ever seen. It is still a strong contender. Well, yeah, we'll talk about it at the end, but...
We'll talk about it now.
All right.
The finals of the Miss NWO contest. My God. There was one mildly attractive...
Bullshit.
If you'd been drinking girl.
There were, okay.
Who had fake boobs.
There was, yes. There were women you could drink yourselves into.
Outside of that, and there were girls that I'd drink myself into a coma. And
there were literally grandmothers out there. These 10 women that they have been interviewed throughout the show, we all knew they had no charisma or personality.
Hopefully none of them are listening right now.
We all know that, we all knew by now that most of them were old. We knew that...
One couldn't hear.
One had no hearing. We knew one had a mullet. So
a couple had mullets.
They all came out and they were introduced one at a time by name.
One of them had a receding hairline. I swear to God she had to be a guy in drag. I mean, there's no other way. It's just impossible.
So they were all brought to the center of the stage area one at a time to dance to the music. You'll never guess this, but they were bad dancers. They all had graphics that listed their name and their measurements and hobbies and stuff. But
height, but no weight.
I couldn't read the graphics. They were produced too poorly.
Which, by the way, why would you have... If I have many questions about this contest. Not the least of which are all of them we asked last week. Like, why the fuck did they do this?
Why would you do this?
What was the point? But if the point... It seems to me... I could be wrong, because I just don't get this. But it seems to me the idea was to use disgusting women. Right?
Yes.
So why wouldn't you list their weight?
I don't know.
Isn't that part of the joke?
I don't know.
They're disgusting and they're overweight?
I don't know.
I do not understand this. It was like, this girl's 5'2", and her measurements are 38, 42, 38. And then you go, oh! Ah! And then there's something like, their hobby.
It was occupation and hobby.
Occupation.
Because, I cannot read most of the graphics. I remember a few, I do remember one or two occupations, such as grain inspector.
Grain inspector. I liked pickup truck detailer.
That was a hobby, by the way.
Oh.
A hobby was pickup truck detailer. That was not the funniest hobby, because one woman's hobby was, I'm not making this up, everybody, cooking bratwurst and french fries.
That's a winner.
Not even eating bratwurst and french fries, cooking them.
Vinny, that's a prize. Come on now.
Hey, if she cooked them and I eat them.
That's what I'm saying.
There you go.
That's your dream woman.
She and I we'd click.
Her hobby is cooking bratwurst and french fries, Vinny. Something she finds joy in and does frequently.
So, it completes her as a person. Eric Bischoff came down to announce the winner. He had clearly been drinking for several hours. He said these women were chosen largely because they lived in the area, so he would not have to pay for hotel or airfare for them. He said they had a tie after all these questions.
Yeah.
So he's going to ask the women one question. It took him forever to get this out. Then here is what happened to decide the winner of the Miss NWO contest. He walked up to the two women that were selected. He leaned over and he whispered into their ear.
They were selected. By who? I don't know.
Don't know. Still don't know. So he whispered into... He went up to one woman first. He whispered into her ear for like 2 seconds. She whispered into his ear for like 8 seconds. Then he said, "Oh, man!"
Yeah.
Then he went over to the other girl. He whispered into her ear. She whispered back into his, and they announced a winner. This was on pay-per-view.
Yes.
You had to put down money, dozens of dollars,
mm-hmm.
to watch this. And that's what you got. Eric Bischoff whispering in the ears of ugly women. So one of the women apparently volunteered to blow him because she was named the winner. They made out on the stage.
They made out.
Eric Bischoff
made out with the winner.
With his grandmother. She was given a crown or a tiara and sash and flowers. And then she got a victory lap. She sauntered down the ring or down the ramp. She moseyed around the ring. Let me repeat, everyone. Pay-per-view.
Yeah.
This is what you got. Then she walked back up the ramp, and then she sat down in a chair. Was this the worst segment ever on a pay-per-view?
See, I don't know, because it's just tough.
What was...
The times have changed. I've mentioned this before on this program. Freeloaders probably haven't heard this, but when I watched the Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan in 1997 or whatever it was, the rematch in WCW, mm-hmm. I gave it -5 stars. One of the worst matches of all fucking time. We watched that match about a year ago, and after the Dup Cup and 8 million women's matches and
Survivor Jenna,
500,000 geeks being called up too early from developmental and having shitty matches on NXT, you watch Hulk Hogan and the Warrior from 1997 here in 2011, and it's a dud.
It is merely atrocious.
It has gained 5 stars yes. since that time. Still 5 stars away from being any good, but...
It has gained 5 stars to reach zero value.
Yes, but times have changed. And, you know, I just think of... I mean, on pay-per-view, it's way, way up there. But you got to remember the Dup Cup was on pay-per-view, number one.
I have literally forgotten everything about that.
And as far as like, segments... I mean, there have been some segments on Impact, there have been some segments on NXT, there have been some segments on Raw. I mean, this, at the time, I'm sure was, like, all time the worst of pro wrestling. Nowadays, it would merely be something really bad on a pay-per-view.
Could be right. You could be right. It was certainly no good at all.
Standards have dropped significantly, is what I'm saying.
Standards have changed. We then had the main event, Hollywood Hogan versus the Giant. Hulk Hogan, for I don't know why, he came out with a few members of the Dallas Cowboys, including Nate Newton, a man who would later be arrested with 175 pounds of marijuana in his trunk.
Pounds, everyone!
175 pounds of marijuana.
He had more marijuana in his trunk than I weigh.
Yes.
Significantly more.
Yes, so I suspect he is popular in the locker room. So, Giant at this point, it's the big show, if any of you don't know. He had been wrestling for like a year, perhaps two.
He was god awful.
He was pretty fucking horrible.
No, he was god awful. Again, this just goes to show how good Big Show is nowadays, even at his age and weight.
Yes.
He is like Ric Flair compared to the Big Show of 1997. His selling, I'm trying to think of who he'd even compare him to. He was a little better than Great Khali, but only a little.
He was like Shad Gaspard when,
Shad was way better than Big Show here. Oh, my God.
The selling in particular. I'm trying to think of... He was comically overselling everything, which is... It's bad anyway, but when you're 7 feet tall...
Great Khali is the best example I can come up with now that everybody would know.
He was at least athletic. Well, he's more coordinated than Khali here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not good because besides just being generally shitty, it's like he had no idea how just ridiculously big he was. He was running the ropes. He took a clothesline and took this giant, wacky flying bump. In the middle of the match, at random, he went up top and missed a flying elbow. It's like, do you not realize you are Gulliver in the land of the Lilliputians here?
Of course not.
You're a fucking giant. You're the giant! That's what they call you. It's your name.
Andor the Gaint.
Andor the Gaint. So, they're having this match. Hogan used powder. He used his belt. There was a phenomenal, phenomenal part here. Hogan hit a body slam, and he hit the big leg drop, which was his finisher. And he hit the big leg drop, and he turned his back to the Giant, and he started to flex and pose and taunt the fans. Meanwhile, behind him, Giant calmly stood got to his feet, stood up, and raised his hands in the air for the chokeslam. Hogan proceeds to parade around the ring. He goes from one side, then the next, then the next. He's laughing. The fans talking about how great he is, how terrible they are, how he's slain the giant. He goes to all four sides of the ring, including at one point walking directly across the middle of the ring where the 7-foot-tall, 450-pound man had been not too long ago, but was certainly not there now. He does this to all four sides of the ring. Giant is behind him all the way. He stops. Finally, he is now going to make the cover and win the match. He turns to the middle of the ring. He bends over. Only then does he realize the giant is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
He looks up the ref, holds up both hands as if to say, "Where did he go?" And then he turns around and Giant is behind him and he screams. This was awesome. This was great pro wrestling is what this was.
This was great pro wrestling.
This was tremendous. Sadly, it did not end there. Giant hit a chokeslam. He made a cover. Nick Patrick had been refereeing this entire show as a heel ref and had counted every three count. Here, he counted one, he counted two, and then he just stopped. So, Giant made a cover. Nick Patrick refused to count again, so Giant chokeslammed him. A million B-teamers ran in to get chokeslammed. Bischoff ran down and gave Hogan a guitar. I don't know why they had an NWO guitar ready. I don't recall Honky Tonk Man being in the NWO, I guess it's possible.
Well, Hogan always played the air guitar.
Ah, so this is his gift for mm-hmm. me inventing the NWO pay-per-view?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he took the gift and he destroyed it over Giant's back. He hit him with a wooden chair a lot. Hall and Nash ran down.
The old cocaine-filled guitar. Powder flew high in the air.
Yes, yes. So they pulled Giant's singlets down, including briefly and gratuitously exposing his ass. Thankfully, they covered it back up quickly. They spray-painted NWO for life on his back. Hogan looked right into the camera and said, "WCW sucks." Then the show ended. That was the finish.
Yep, that was your main event, everybody. No finish.
And here's the thing. That was the planned finish.
Of course.
It's not like something went wrong or there were technical difficulties or somebody got hurt. No, that's what they wanted to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
This was a terrible pay-per-view, everybody.
Oh, my God, this is awful.
A terrible, terrible show. I recommend everybody watch it immediately. No. I would be lying. Yeah, so anyway, let's move on here. The good old days were not always good. I guess that's the best way to put it. We got a ton of shout-outs. Let me play a song here before we get into these. This is from Michael here. Let's check it out, and then we'll do the shout-outs. There you go.
All right.
I'm a bee.
I'm a bee. That was better than the other conversation we heard earlier.
All right, let's do these shout outs here. Got lots of stuff to do. We got tons of shows tomorrow, everybody. I need to go to bed. Todd Martin is up tomorrow. Gabe Sapolsky is up tomorrow. Dave Meltzer is up tomorrow. And Terry Funk.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Why don't you space some of those out more?
Well, because Thursday, I've got Mikey Whipwreck and Lance Storm.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Are you taking time off soon?
Are you kidding me?
You're going to be stockpiling shows.
And I'm doing more shows on Friday. Got a new After Dark on Friday. Christopher Gillespie talking conspiracies. Mm-hmm. And we'll also probably have an Open Lines show as well for pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And for those of you fans of the After Dark radio show, next Friday, Jeff Meldrum is going to be on the show. The author of Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science. He's a legit PhD, works at a university in Idaho, and he studies Bigfoot. Seriously.
Hmm.
So I want to talk to an actual scientist about this. It's going to be the most awesome show of all time. Coming up next Friday. You can always check it out at brianalvarez.com. Head up there right now. That's the official After Dark website. We have new stories up there every day. All sorts of weird things, such as prairie dogs have a language all their own and can describe what humans look like. So when you go to the zoo, Vinny, prairie dogs actually go, "Fat guy, purple shirt."
Huh.
You didn't know that, did you?
Didn't know that.
And I know that. It's up at brianalvarez.com and a lot of other stuff. So, and of course, sign up for this website. And if you do, you not only get this show twice a week, but you get all of the other new shows as well. All of these Figure Four dailies I talked about tomorrow. If you sign up right now, then later today, you will be listening to Dave Meltzer, Terry Funk, Todd Martin, and Gabe Sapolsky. Tomorrow alone, you get all the new shows and you get the thousands. I added up over 5,000 hours of audio in our archives if you sign up right now. So sign up, get a shout out, and this is how they work. This is from David, Wrestling Observer subscriber, became a member of the Empire in the merger and have never used my shout out. I'm a 61-year-old Mensa member.
Wow.
So I don't think I'm in your target market. Even with that being the case, you may be the target market for After Dark Radio, my friend. Even with that being the case, I want to use my shout-out to thank everyone associated with the site. The Observer Newsletter continues to be the gold standard. It's due to the fact that Mr. Meltzer is a rare individual who is both a journalist and historian who also happens to be an excellent writer. Figure Four Weekly is also great, and I really enjoy the themed issues. Audio offerings are incredible. I particularly appreciate the Wrestling Observer Show, the Brian and Vinny Show.
Woo!
A Mensa member, everybody. Figure Four Dailies with Lance and Dr. Lucha, the Carl Stern programs, and the interviews with Bruno that prove to the world he is a great man. I consider my monthly membership fee to have the best dollar-for-dollar value of anything I buy. Keep up the good work. That's from David Stevens. And he says, on an entirely different subject, cats, you're right, Granny's wrong. It has been proven that indoor cats are much healthier and live substantially longer than outdoor cats. Keep them in. It's for their own good. Well, they ain't going out. I shouldn't say ain't to a Mensa member, but I just did. All right. This is from Eric. I've been a subscriber since September 11th of 2009 because of my old roomie, Troy. Granny gives me laughs. Lance makes me giggle. Dave offers wrestling knowledge. Vinny makes me feel normal. Brian puts a smile on my face. The little buggers offer a peace of mind. And Carl Stern isn't as stern as Lance. Adam and Mike ain't my bag. Interviews are awesome. Friday open lines are worth the money. Check out my writing at vintagedarcy.wordpress.com. That's D-A-R-S-I-E. vintagedarcy.wordpress.com. Or writerscafe.org/Darcy/writing for wrestling thoughts and wrestling poetry.
Wow.
Besides which, I've been blessed having you all enter my mind via the earbuds. Keep up the good work. Even though you guys think your shows suck, they make college seem not that bad.
Well, college sucks more. I guarantee you this show's better than going to college.
College sucks. I never went, but I can tell you it sucks because my wife's in it. Minnesota rules, so does St. Cloud University and Jesus. That's from Eric.
If you listen to Jesus, why do you listen to us? We're going to hell.
I wish I could find some of Eric's poems here, but this would take me a while, everybody. I'm not a Mensa member. All right.
And you didn't go to college.
I didn't go to college. I did for a little while. I'm the guy, when he fills out the resume, which I haven't done in 15 years, that says, some college.
I see.
That's me. It's from Brandon. I really enjoy your radio shows, along with the other 15 to 20 new audio shows per week, for the reasonable price of $10.99 per month. I don't write these, everybody. I swear to God. I'd like to take this opportunity to submit my free shout-out to your fine program. Without further ado, shout-outs to Todd Tillinghast, All My Noobs in Mobile Bike Polo, Paul London, Young Tattler. That sounds distressing. Mr. Percy and his son, world-class DJ Pringle, the SA Goons, my dog Rufus, the entire staff at F4W Wrestling Observer, the Choom Gang for all the good times, and a special fuck you goes out to Republicans, Fox News, multinational corporations, and Vince Russo. That's from Brandon. I wonder if we'd be a multinational corporation.
Lance lives in Canada.
We do. We do. These are, we have contributors all over the world, and this show travels all over the world. So I hope he has not given me a fuck you. All right. Let's see what else we've got here. Let's see. Oh, the revised list of shout-outs.
What does that mean?
Shit.
Have you been reading shout-outs you're not supposed to read?
No, the one he just sent, he's got it revised. So he's got Todd Tillinghast, All My Noobs in Mobile Bike Polo, Paul London, Young Tattler, and the New Orleans Trolls, the SA Goons, his dog Rufus, Mr. Percy and his son, world-class DJ Pringle, the entire staff at F4W Wrestling Observer, and Choom Gang for all the good times. And he also sent a video here. If you have 5 minutes, a video of WWE wrestlers playing baseball with the Chicago media from 1994.
Don't play it. I watched it. It's
5 minutes.
We don't need 5 minutes. I will tell you the highlight of it right now. Dink. During the Clown's Midget Buddy, he comes up to bat, and the Chicago media guys are like joking and like roll a pitch up there. And Doink comes out, and he basically bullies them and says, pitch the fucker. And they're scared, so they do. And Dink hits the ball, and he goes tearing off down to first base. He beats the ball to the bag. He gets a hit, and the locker room goes crazy. Because the midget did something. They all have a giant party. They run up to him. They celebrate. They're like throwing him in the air. That's the only good part.
If I were a midget, I'd be so pissed off.
That came out wrong.
Brian and Vinny, I would like to cash in my free shout out as it is my 30th birthday today, 25th of January. Can I give a shout out to me, my lovely girlfriend, Alex, Sam, Lauren, Jason, my sister, Naomi, Mark, my nephew, Cameron, my beautiful niece, Scarlett, David and Jill in France, Mom and Chris, everyone at St. David's APL, and my two new mini pufferfish, Brian and Vinny. Vinny, of course, is the larger one who eats all the food.
Excellent.
Been a member of the site since June 8th. First show I listened to was a Karate Kid Part 1 review, and I managed to get through all the Brian and Vinny shows on the website. Oh my God. Freeloaders, you are missing out on tons of audio, and you were very lucky to get the new After Dark shows for free at brianalvarez.com. Anyway, thanks for the shout-out. Keep up the good work. That's Joe in Devon, England.
Thanks, Joe.
Happy birthday, Joe.
And happy birthday.
All right, this is from Blasco. Dear Brian, I finally decided to cash in my free shout-out after being a subscriber for a year or so. Started listening to you and Mike on the Sports Byline show late last year. I've been hooked ever since. Hardly watch any pro wrestling, but I still managed to find time and money to resubscribe to Observer Figure 4 every month. I started with just listening to you and Dave talk on Wrestling Observer, but now I listen to pretty much every show that gets up. I must admit, I did not like Vinny at first, but now he's starting to grow on me, and I think he's a fine gentleman.
You were right the first time.
Also wanted to give props to the After Dark show, for I really like Supernatural Findings and such. It's another sweet deal.
Your enunciation of that sentence was awesome.
One of my favorite things of the week is spamming the mailbag in hopes to hear Dave or Brian answering my questions.
Get a life.
I can listen. Oh, Vinny.
Sorry.
I can listen to you two talk about MMA and wrestling for hours on end and still find questions to ask. Having one figure four is a great thing to have. I listen to you guys when I'm riding the bus to work, when I'm doing stuff around the house, or when I have nothing better to do and I want to pass time. For all the freeloaders who listen to just the free shows, what are you doing? If I can afford this, anyone can, and it's well worth the money and time. I have no plugs, but I do issue a challenge. If you guys are ever in the New York area, I challenge Brian to a sparring match.
Uh-oh.
When I plan on tapping him out in front of all his friends, Dave, and even Granny. What do you say, Chico?
He accepts.
I accept!
Next time we're in New York.
Tap me out. I also want to thank you, Brian, for having Nate Webb on the June 29th show. Ironically enough, that interview was taped on my birthday, and Nate Webb is one of my favorite indie wrestlers. It was a cool, unintentional birthday present that made me smile. Thanks a lot, guys, and keep up the great work. That is from Jason.
Gracias, Jason.
You're not going to tap me. Ridiculous. All right, this is from... that's the last one, actually. The last two were Rumble Pools, but we're going to do those on Thursday when I actually get... The official one. All right. Let's see. I may have one here from Rob, actually, an official one. But again, we're going to do these on Thursday. So that's something you can all look forward to. So anyway, we're out of time today, everybody. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, tomorrow we have four people appearing on Figure Four Daily or Wrestling Observer at some point. Gabe Sapolsky, Todd Martin, Dave Meltzer, and Terry fucking Funk are going to be on the show tomorrow. And the following day, Mikey Whipwreck and Lance Storm. So if you have been waiting to sign up, what the hell are you waiting for? Plus this week, the brand new Wrestling Observer 2011 awards issue is out tomorrow. Vinny should take all day trying to format that beast. And then on Saturday, we'll have a show with Dave after Strikeforce. And on Sunday, it is our Royal Rumble radio show after the event. It is WrestleMania season. There is no better time to sign up. Do it now. Anyway, we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Before we go.
Oh, no.
I know It's late. We're both tired. We won't talk about Ring of Honor, but everyone go to YouTube. Go to Ring of Honor's channel. Watch the Bravado Brothers video right fucking now.
Oh, shit. I forgot I was going to do that. Remind me, we'll play it on Thursday's show.
We'll play the video on Thursday's show.
All right.
This ruled.
So Thursday's show, we're going to play the Bravado Brothers video. So check that out Thursday, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Adios.